Hello and welcome back to another Baseball America Prospect Podcast Top 30 Breakdown. Today I'm joined by my colleague Josh Norris. So Josh, you're in a similar position this year of ranking a World Series winning Dodgers team. Still a pretty loaded organization on top of that, which, you know, I think it's kind of that Breaking Bad meme of like, you can't keep getting away with this. That's how it sort of feels as a fan, I would imagine, of any of the other 29 teams. But Josh, talk to me a little bit overview wise. How deep is this Dodger system? Is this an organization where the struggle isn't finding 30 prospects, but cutting it down to 30?
I think it's right riding that line. Like the way we've done it this year is a little different. Like I think in past years, Roky Sasaki would still qualify. And there's a couple other guys who would still count. We didn't do the service time thing. Shout out Ethan Houlihan here. But so that took a little bit of depth away from the system. But there's still a fair amount of guys. I think the difference between this year and last is there are a lot of guys who I wrote, like, you know, injuries have kind of marred their seasons. And it's kind of an incomplete grade on them. Like Yoendry Vargas, for example, or guys like Kyle Hurt and River Ryan and Kellen Lindsey, who really, you know, played only a little bit, if at all. And you kind of just rewrite the scouting report from the year prior and say, okay, that's what it looks like when he's healthy. And we'll see what happens next year.
Yeah, sometimes those reports are just a little less work. It's just kind of reformatting what you've already written because literally nothing has changed.
Well, something has changed, but you don't know what it's going to look like coming out on the other end.
Sure, but you know, yeah, you also tough to predict that. But let's jump into it here with the first question. Of course, we always start at number one. This year, you had, I would imagine, a few candidates that you probably could have ranked one in this system, all outfielders, but you went with Eduardo Quintero, player that you've been watching since he came stateside, maybe even earlier than that. I can't remember if you did see him in the DSL or not, but give me your thoughts on Quintero and sort of how split was the camp among opposing scouts and those that you spoke with when working through the list and working through the reporting between him and some of the other outfielders that are ranked at the top here.
You know, I think if you surveyed, you know, 10 different scouts, you might get 10 different orders, if that's possible. Math people, check me out on that one, of those four different players. You know, there were votes for Josue De Paula at number one. There were votes for Zaire Hope at number one. There were people early in the process who thought Mike Sirota might be the best of them all. Ultimately, I think I found Quintero to be the most well-rounded player and the best bet to stick in center field. Sirota might be neck and neck with him, but obviously he had the injury that he had. So I want to wait to see what he looks like when he comes back. And you're right, you know, I was, part of it was being able to see Quintero more than the other guys. I'd hope to see DePaula in the fall league, but that didn't come to pass. Same idea with Kendall George. Not that he was in contention for number one, but I've been really, you know, I'd really been struck by Quintero when I saw him in the complex league as like a guy that's going to shoot up these rankings based on just, you know, the swing, the potential for growth in the swing, potential for growth in the body, the all-around skill set. He doesn't have like a 70 on the card like some of the other guys, but he's got a lot of 55s and doesn't have any 40s either. So I think the well-rounded nature of Quintero really led me to put him at number one. And, you know, when people see the list, getting a few texts like, hey, how did you rank him over him? And why did you rank him over him? It's, all right. No one's convicted. You know, I think these are the right four guys at the top. And this is my order.
Of that group that we're talking about here with Quintero, De Paula, Mike Sirota, and Zaire Hope, who do you think is just the best pure hitter of that group?
I think it's De Paula. I mean, I think that's his whole thing is he's a guy who can hit and hit for power. And if he plays even fringe average defense, you're happy. And there are a lot of people who kind of say, oh, if he reaches his, you know, 100th percentile, 90th percentile ceiling, you're talking about a guy like Yordan Alvarez. I think there's a ways to go there, but that's kind of the idea. A lot of contact, a lot of impact, maybe like a first baseman down the line.
Now, he got into a little bit more power, but based on, you know, the EVs and that sort of thing we've been seeing, you know, under the hood for a few years now with him, is there any concern that, you know, maybe he just doesn't have the ability to add the angles to be able to lift the ball consistently? Or is it pretty universal that scouts still think that there's 25 or more home runs in that bat?
I think it's the latter there. You know, people do think there's 25, 30 home runs in that bat. And I think it's a matter of swinging at the right pitches and being a little more aggressive than he has been. Because you do see him draw a ton of walks. And I imagine there's some balls that he can damage. Not that walks are bad, but I think he's letting some pitches pass that he could probably damage. And if he starts being more aggressive on those types of pitches, then you're going to see the home run totals, you know, jump. Of all the guys in that group, I did not expect he would be one of them that had 30 stolen bags like he did this year. Yeah, he had 32 stolen bases this year. If you told me he had that, I would be very surprised considering his size and lack of speed.
Yeah, it's just those good instincts, those reads.
Yeah, no question.
Like,
right, that's
it's Juan
Soto-esque. To him.
Well, so let's move on to the next one here. Looking at the bigger picture among the entire system, do you feel that the system is better than it was last year? Do you feel like it's worse or sort of indifferent, which is a reasonable answer with the Dodgers organization?
I think it's close to a little indifferent, maybe trending toward a little worse just because of the injuries that I talked about. You know, you don't know what Lindsey's, you know, Kellen Lindsey ultimately looks like. You don't know what Joandre Vargas's steps he could have taken this year. Jackson Ferris looked like he took a little bit of a step back. There are some other guys who really showed good stuff, but not a whole heck of a lot of command. I think there's a lot of those kind of arms toward the back of the system, and they need to take some steps forward before they're viable, you know, top 15 prospects in the system. And then there's, you know, we've got some wild cards from the draft, but we'll see how those go. But I think it's kind of a push this year in terms of last year. And like I said too, like if we were still doing this last year, Roki would still count. I don't know how I'd rank him, but he would still count nonetheless.
And there were three players from the Dodgers' most recent draft ranked, correct? Was it West,
Root and
Leiter,
Davalane.
and what did you say was the last one?
Davalone, the two Arkansas
Oh,
guys.
yeah, Davalone and then Vidoric as well. So it's
Yeah,
actually
Vidor. He got
four.
the
Yeah, I totally forgot. I
the
totally forgot about
yeah.
Davalone. Oh, and then Zach Root. Yeah, so it's five.
Yeah.
Stronger draft class than last year's, and I guess to a lesser extent the year before, though you weren't doing this chapter for the handbook. How do you think those guys kind of compare and contrast? Because they had a decent amount of picks in comparison to what they've had in previous years.
I think part of it was the reason that there are so many in there is just because I needed spots at the end. You know, like again, they did trade a few amount of guys. They got guys back too. I mean, I didn't expect to be ranking Adam Serwinowski back in there, but he's there. I went with some upside guys. I tend to look at what they paid them relative to slot and give them that. Like Aiden West was an example there. Leiter is like the ultimate lottery ticket. He's a stuff monster, but he hasn't been healthy in a while. And he's one of the favorites of our college writer, Jacob Rudner. So I was like, all right, I'll put him in there. And then Vidoric got best outfield arm in the system. So it's like, all right, if he's the best something in the system and I need a guy to fill out the back end, why not?
Yeah. He
There's
might be in the mix for best athlete too. He was one of the best testers among college players. He might have been one or two in terms of like how he ranked out in terms of athletic testing, jump testing, force plates, that sort of stuff. He's an interesting player.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting players in here, and I mean, and I don't think anybody wants to hear this that isn't wearing Dodger blue, but there's a lot of room for upside in the system here. So
Shocker.
there's room for growth in this system, and I don't think there's going to be a whole heck of a lot of graduations outside of like an Alex Freeland, just because there's not. I mean, it would be surprised if any of the four outfielders got enough time to graduate. So I think mostly you're going to see what you see right now still in the system outside of trades in midsummer. Yeah, I think there'd probably be a push in terms of the system next year if everything stays intact. I guess River Ryan guys and Kyle Hurt could graduate as well, depending on their health, but not a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah, it depends how, you know, quickly they come back, how healthy they are, and I guess to a lesser extent too, you know, how long they stick around just on the major league roster, which is something that's new for us, as you said, this year.
Right.
So they could even graduate that way, which often helps us with guys that we.
I mean, that's how Dalton Rushing graduated, more or less.
Yeah. Well, we didn't. I don't think he wanted to rank rushing again. So, good reason. So let's move on to, this is probably an easy one. Who's your best guess for number one next year? Of all the podcasts that we probably asked this one on, this is probably the easiest, because unless he falls off the table, it's going to be the same guy. No,
I disagree. I'm going to go with him, but this is the hardest call, because it was the hardest call to rank him at number one to begin with. If you told me one of those four guys comes out and goes gangbusters and jumps all the way up, like if Mike Sirota continues the path he was on, then maybe he jumps DePaula and Quintero. But I mean, the margin between Quintero and DePaula and the rest of the group is not large. So if you told me one of them came out and just was a super breakout player, then maybe he jumps it. So I'm going to say Quintero holds serve, but I'm going to say it with not a whole heck of a lot of confidence.
Fair. I mean, it was a difficult question. You've kind of explained that a couple times now. Let me ask it this way. Are there any dark horse candidates that are outside of that top four group? Maybe even somebody outside the top 10 that you think could make a significant jump, international guys that maybe are coming from the complex into full season next year, that, you know, a couple tweaks or whatever could yield them maybe making a big jump.
Internationally, their group was a little light just because they spent all their pool money on Sasaki. So that group wasn't large this year. I don't think I rank anybody from the DSL, the 2025 Dodgers DSL this year, which is a departure from what they've been. I would say if I'm going to stick with the outfielders, I think it would probably be Davalon. I got one guy who I really trust saying, you know, this could be a 70 or 80 hit tool when it's all said and done. And based on what he'd seen in the complex league and things like that, he might be the best pure hitter of the bunch. And if that's the case, then he'll be number one. So that would be my, I guess, dark horse or gray horse or something like that.
That's all the Dodgers need is another, fledgling outfield prospect with exciting upside. Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the last question here, the video portion of the podcast. What is this org good at developing? This might be a long answer because there's probably a few things that you could say they're pretty good at developing, but what's the one sort of positional group that sticks in your mind the most?
I don't think there is one. I mean, they've got good pieces, but they always have enough firepower to kind of fill their big league roster if they don't develop homegrown stuff. So like, I got a question at midseason this year. I said, you know, if maybe in 2027, would the Dodgers outfield be DePaula, Hope, Quintero? And it's the answer is no. I can say without question, the answer is it's not going to be all those three. They're going to trade the one or two who I believe are going to be, or they believe are going to be the lesser of the bunch and get stuff. So what, I guess a roundabout answer would say they're good at trading. They're good at developing chips for trade and supplementing their big league roster that way. There's some good arms that have come out. Kasparius, Jack Dreyer are good arms that have come out in recent years. We'll see what River Ryan and Kyle Hurt look like. I guess you want to count Kyle Hurt. He was a trade piece. And so was River Ryan, but they've done the majority of the development there. Right now, the outfielders are obviously leading the way. So we'll see how those look at the big leagues. But that's what they're best at developing right now, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at just the depth of the arms that they have and just pitching in general, and you know, guys will frankly fit a variety of roles kind of in those early years that they come up and can, you know, push their way into the rotation, like an Emmett Sheehan, someone right. like that.
And they have an abundance of pitching depth. It's not exactly at the top of their rotation. Like it's, you know, Sheehan is the best of the bunch, but if you're looking at the 2029 lineup, Yamamoto, I mean, I don't know how much development they did there, but it's homegrown. No shade there, but he got the contract he got for a reason. Blake Snell obviously is not there. Shohei Ohtani, Rookie Sasaki. Yep, Glasnow. Those are all trade pieces, but you've got Sheehan. You've got guys like Landon Knack, possibly a Jackson Ferris, Bobby Miller. There's depth rotation pieces, but they haven't developed that one in a while. Like, the best homegrown piece of their roster right now is Will Smith. And, yeah, you know, that's a cornerstone catcher, not something to sneeze at.
No. And they've had plenty of catching prospects over the years that were highly touted that frankly haven't amounted to what right. Smith has. So they did a good job of internally evaluating that as well. I guess, you know, among the position groups, is it outfielders? Is it infielders? You know, who's sort of the best guy they have developed internally? Because I'd say Michael Busch isn't developed by the Cubs. He was developed by the Dodgers. Is he the best current hitter among those guys, kind of non-Will Smith category? Or is there somebody else?
I would say that's the one that jumps to mind. And, you know, what position would you put him at? I would say batter's box. You know, he can hit.
First.
He'll hit. That's a great one. Right now, it looks like they've got a steady supply of outfielders, even beyond the guys that we talked about. There's still like a Tunink in the mix. There's Kendall George and his 90 speed in the mix. Ching Shin Ko is in the mix. Now, there's a lot of outfielders in this group, and there's a few up the middle players as well. But like, yeah, it's shortstops, it's left side of the infield. There's a lot of interesting arms with stuff. I don't think there's too many better pure stuff organizations. But you know, the top, the cream of their roster is free agents or trade guys.
Absolutely,
that's not a bad way to do it. The ring still counts the same.
No, and I think if you have the means to be able to do that and also spend internationally, spend in the draft, spend on the internal resources, you know, and that's a wide variety of things, but primarily among it, player development, and just having bigger staffs than a lot of the other teams, you know, it's a way that they're able to continually turn this crank of having tradable prospects that other teams desire.
I mean, yeah, and they have a lot of depth. I mean, you don't win 18-inning World Series games without having some depth.
Yeah. Honestly, I think at the end of the day, it's what's allowed them to win multiple World Series and to win a back-to-back World Series at probably a point in time where it's harder than it's ever been.
We didn't mention, you know, longer,
and
the number two homegrown guy is Andy Páez, who...
Yeah, yeah, it's probably true.
Who saved the World Series. Might have, you know... killed I'm blanking on who he collided with in the process. But, you know, he got them a ring with that one catch.
And I think he's probably a great development story because he was more of a pure hitter, considered a corner outfielder with not a ton of defensive value, had a big injury, remade his body, kind of tweaked his swing a little bit. I don't want to say remade his swing, but tweaked the bat path a little bit to get a little bit more backspin. And he's become a 30 home run bat that can play center field. And, you know, that's certainly a credit to the Dodgers player development. When you think of the guy that we saw in AFL back in 2023 or whatever it was, or 22, to the guy that he is today.
Right. I mean, and then I'm just looking at their 40-man roster. I was blanking on his name, but picking up a guy like Will Klein on the margins. Yeah. And then, I mean, he had the game of his life just being – a good enough scouting organization to go get that guy and to put him on the roster and, you know, watch as he did in that super game. Was it four innings of like six punchouts with four shutouts with like six punchouts? That was incredible. So there's a lot of really good things about this organization, no doubt.
100%. Well, we'll wrap up the video portion of this. Thank you for tuning in on YouTube. For those that are listening on podcast format, we're going to be right back with a whole grip of more questions to go through. But for the YouTube folks, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you on the next one.
Every day, companies you've probably never heard of are making billions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records in the internet and then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace making money off of your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura's online security capabilities have allowed me to feel safe when it comes to my online presence. Aura fights back. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal. It is a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep logins safe, and spam call protection to cut off scammers. Aura also scans the dark web for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, and passwords, and notifies you instantly if they're exposed. Aura also removes what is already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That's enough time for Aura to start removing your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are safeguarded. That's aura.com/remove. Certain terms apply. See the site for details.
All right. And for the podcast listeners, as I mentioned, we're going to keep on rolling here with Josh Norris talking Dodgers prospects. So let's jump outside of the top 10 here. Let's go into this 11 to 30. We talked about this a little bit in the first half of the show, but it's a system that's always stocked with really interesting prospects in that 11 to 30 range. And I said this to you off air. It also is always an area where there seem to be a couple of potential, if not future, top 100 prospects lurking. Are there any guys like that this year that, you know, you could look forward and say, this could be a guy that jumps into the top 10 and, you know, potentially is considered a really interesting prospect, not just by us, but kind of universally throughout the industry?
I think you'd have to look in the 11 to 15 range. Christian Zazueta is a big up arrow guy, needs to maybe get the breaking ball a little bit more consistent, have a more diversified attack plan than just north-south. He needs to be able to go east-west a little bit. But there's size, there's projection, there's youth on his side. I think he's got some of the most refined arsenal of their young pitching prospects. I'd also look at maybe an Adam Sarwanowski to take that next step. He was pretty gangbusters once he came over after the trade. It's a nice little pickup from the Reds in that deal. Looking at my list as well, Sterling Paddock at number 30 was kind of a sneaky guy who might jump up a little bit this year. Aiden West from the draft, you know, big time upside guy. And then there's guys who were just injured a little bit this year, like Kellen Lindsay and Yoendry Vargas, to see if they might make that second chance at a second impression, I guess is the way I would look at it. A second chance at an encore from their previous years.
Yeah, and, you know, I think those are all good names, and it's just a system that consistently could be, you know, like you said, they scout really well, they develop well when guys are in the system, and there might even be guys from outside this top 30 that pop next year, because it seems like we get a few of those every year as well. This might be a little bit redundant from what we just asked, but who are some of your favorites or some of the scout favorites that you're getting in your reporting from outside of the top 10 in this system?
You might have, in the name of non-redundancy, I might go to some guys who might make an impact maybe in the bullpen again this year. You mean everybody in the Dodgers fandom is familiar with River Ryan. Obviously, that stuff sounds like it's more or less intact after a long layoff. And if you told me that he came in and was made an impact either in a multi-inning bullpen role or maybe a back-end starter's role, I think starter's role would be tough given his lack of innings over the last couple of years. Wouldn't be surprising. Kyle Hurt, same boat. Patrick Copen, who had some of the most, I think he had the most strikeouts in the organization, but also some of the most walks in the organization. I think he might have led the organization in both categories. If he can find the strike zone a little more often, you might be a guy who could be a weapon out of the bullpen as well, because that stuff is legitimate. And then same idea with Jose Rodriguez. I put him at the very back. I thought he was going to go high in the Rule 5 draft. Size, stuff, funk. I think there's a lot there, but his knee has to heal. He had a knee injury toward the end of the season that kind of tanked his Rule 5 stock and maybe kept him off the 40-man roster, as it were. But if you're going to go with guys who are on the 40-man roster, Ronan Kopp might be that guy as well. He's got some interesting stuff. So those are the guys I think could be impact this year, or at least reach the big leagues this year, if not true impact.
Yeah, and you know, this is a team that, despite having all of those stars, despite being so aggressive in the free agent market and on the trade market, they kind of like to bake in some rests for some of these guys. I don't think they're always clear-cut injuries, so there's always opportunities for these guys to get up to the big leagues and, you know, maybe impress a little bit and find themselves in the mix once it comes to playoff roster time. Who's your sleeper, your personal sleeper, your personal cheese ball in this system? Who's the guy that Josh Norris would stump for?
Well, I believe the article's already on the site, and it's going to be redundant. Zezueta, you know, for the reasons I already mentioned, size, stuff, there's room to grow, projectability, a lot of good things that could coalesce one day into maybe a back to middle end of middle of the rotation guy.
That's Josh Norris's sleeper for everybody that's out there. It's a good name. Last question that we'll do here. Which prospect do you believe will actually debut for the Dodgers that hasn't already debuted for the Dodgers in this system? I asked that question because they trade a lot of prospects, frankly, and they often make the right decisions and right calls on those guys. Are there any prospects, we'll say like position guys or starters, that you think will meet the Dodgers standard of, you know, at least being an everyday regular for them, which is a higher standard than every other team in the sport of baseball?
I would say I think at least Quintero and Sirota would get that chance. Looking down the list, guys who haven't debuted yet, that might be it in the near future. I mean, there's the jury's out on so many of these other guys, but those other two, like I said, with Sirota, you know, he was on a really fast track before that injury, and it'll be interesting to see what he looks like when he comes back. But I think those two give them the two most well-rounded players in the outfield group. And, you know, the rest are so far away that I'm not even going to hazard a guess who would be Dodgers caliber just yet. But those are the two I'd come to. I know it's not the an Einstein-level answer, but it's what I'm going to go with right now.
So you do five systems, so four other systems besides the Dodgers. You have the Dodgers, you have the Giants, you have
Yankees, Phillies, Rangers.
And among those systems, is this the best system that you cover? And if not, who is and why?
I think the Giants is the best system I cover. It's close, but I think the Giants have more guys who I think are going to be everyday regulars, and they're deeper right now. And part of that is a function that the Giants just added a ton of guys at the deadline, and the Dodgers dealt a few of them. I mean, the Giants system was the biggest 180, certainly, in my group. I look back at last year's list, last year's list came out before Josuar, so this is even a pre-Josuar era list. I mean, it wasn't good, just period, point blank. I remember we were thinking about doing the playing time qualification at the beginning of last year's list, and I said, we can't do that. You're going to take three of my top 10 guys from me. And none of them was a particularly sexy top 10 guy, but I didn't have more guys. But I think right now it's the Dodgers and the Giants, maybe A and then B plus, with the Giants being the top by a little bit, just better depth right now.
Yeah, I was going to say that the Dodgers, if they're not one, seem to be the clear two among those groups, especially considering a few of them have made quite a bit of trades over the years to acquire major league talent. And the Dodgers seem to be the only ones that are still, you know, stocked and ready to make more of those trades, and credit to them. Josh, any closing thoughts on this Dodgers system before we wrap up the show?
Well, I will say, like, too, we talk about this, we talk about the team loading up, using its system to load up. The rumors today, if you follow Twitter, are that the Giants are being aggressive on a pair of second basemen. So by the time this list, by the time this podcast drops, the system may have changed somewhat, and we'll see exactly who is valued. But
we're putting it out. We're putting it out in about 14 hours. So if they can avoid making a trade in the next 14 hours, we'll be pretty good. might be on YouTube at 9. So yeah, we're going to try to get it up quick for that reason, because I know I was in a podcast. This is a funny story. On a podcast last night with somebody else on a fantasy podcast talking about JJ Weatherholt, and they were like, where is he going to play? And I'm like, I think we could have a Nolan Arenado deal coming in the next couple of weeks. The podcast is supposed to post Friday, and Arenado just got traded. So
there's always something, Josh. I did one with a Yankees-centric podcast last summer, and we were talking about a bunch of stuff. And I think the second we hung up, Devers got traded. It's like, oh, that would have come up on a Yankee-centric podcast. But anyway, closing thoughts on the Dodger system. It's still really good. It's still a lot of good, fun stuff at the top. And if guys get healthy and rebound a little bit, it could be even better. Like, I think that's the biggest difference, is a little bit of the depth of SAP thanks to trades and new qualifications. And there were just some of the bigger names from last year just didn't get a chance to do what they have the ability to do. So it's a strong B system for me right now.
Very good. Just keeps on rolling with the Dodgers. For all those that tuned in, whether on YouTube or on the podcast, obviously the podcast folks are still hearing us. For Josh, for Jeff, this has been another Baseball America Prospect Podcast Top 30 Deep Dive.